Hey, if you're starting to think beyond your student loans, check out our other show, Financially Free Era. It's about what comes next, investing, building wealth, and designing a life you actually want. Just search for Financially Free Era wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. Today, I thought it would be fun to talk about the future of the student loan tax bomb. I thought I'd give a little bit of a high-level summary of this, talk about some of the problems and concerns that people have with the change in the law that happened this past year, and we're going to talk about what might start occurring starting in early 2027 and what it might mean for folks who are getting forgiveness in the 2020s and the 2030s as to whether or not you need to be saving for your own taxes for student loan forgiveness. Let's first address the kinds of student loan forgiveness that are not taxable events. PSLF in statute specifically is tax-free. PSLF has never been taxed except in some rare cases on the state level in random states that most people don't live in. The good news is it's like, except for a couple states, like PSLF in general is tax-free. Death and disability discharge, this is also tax-free. That did not used to be the case. There was an event that catalyzed this. A veteran who had suffered a traumatic brain injury in the Middle East in one of the wars there was totally disabled from his traumatic brain injury from an IED. He had $200,000 of student loans from graduate school, and he applied for the discharge because obviously he's permanently disabled with the damage that was done to his brain from this blast. And he was approved for the disability discharge, but then because of the tax code, which of course is not written by the IRS, they just enforce it. Congress writes the tax laws and IRS enforces it. They sent out a notification to this individual that, hey, of the $200,000, you have to pay $80,000 to the federal government. And by the way, Michigan, where he lived, you owe $10,000 to the state of Michigan, something along those lines. And this was outrageous to multiple members of Congress from both parties because, oh my gosh, this person served our country and you're doing that to him. You're making him pay money that he doesn't have because he's disabled and you're going to come after him with tax liens for his care that he needs. So, of course, that was outrageous. They changed the rules around 2017, and then they extended that treatment of death and disability tax-free loan forgiveness, and it's permanent, basically. So that's good news on that front. Now, in terms of if you ever refinance, the issue with refinancing student loans is you want to be a little careful to make sure you have plenty of disability insurance just in case, have plenty of term life insurance just in case. The good news is the extra marginal amount that you would need to cover refinancing student loans just in case the lender's death and disability provisions aren't as good as the federal government. You know, it doesn't cost very much extra at all to just get a little of extra insurance just in case, right? If you're refinancing your student loans. So a couple other thoughts now. Let's talk to the student loan forgiveness 20 to 25 year folks that might have to pay taxes on the forgiven student loan debt that work in the private sector. So if you work in the private sector, you're not eligible for public service loan forgiveness. If you have a debt to income ratio, you know, over 2-to-1. On this podcast, I used to say greater than 1-to-1 back in the days of pay and save. But, you know, it's probably over 2-to-1 in the private sector long term is a good candidate for forgiveness with the new rules. Now, you might say it depends. So 1.5-to-1 debt to income ratio, if somebody's eligible for new IBR, probably still makes sense to go for forgiveness. If somebody's only eligible for the wrap plan and their debt to income ratio is 1.5-to-1, it probably does not make sense to go for student loan forgiveness. It heavily depends upon, you know, what your debt to income ratios are and what repayment plans that you qualify for as to whether or not you should go for forgiveness or not. Now, in terms of people that know they're supposed to go for forgiveness, know that they want to go for the private sector version of it, or also keep in mind, you can work part-time and still get forgiveness from the 20 or 25 year variety, because PSLF requires full-time employment, right? Whereas the forgiveness under new IBR or the wrap plan, that doesn't require any employment. It has no employment requirement. It's just a time-based forgiveness based on the number of payments you made over a minimum amount of time. You know, if you're in the private sector, I'd call it private sector student loan forgiveness because that's what the vast majority of people using it where they work, right? There's not a ton of people that work part-time for nonprofit long-term for their entire careers compared to the people who work full-time, right? It's a minority of folks that do that. But let's just say again, 20 and 25 year income-driven repayment forgiveness, right? What changed is in 2021, the Biden administration came out with the American Rescue Plan that made student loan forgiveness of all kinds tax-free. Now, they did this because Senator Elizabeth Warren and her staff identified that the taxability of student loan forgiveness was a key obstacle to canceling student loan debt. It effectively prevented it. It made it impossible to do, because if you've canceled $10,000 of student loans and handed the borrower a tax bill for $2,500, that's not palatable. People don't have that money lying around. That would completely defeat the purpose in a lot of cases. So the whole strategy of making student loan forgiveness tax-free was primarily because the progressive wing of the Democratic Party wanted to see more student loan cancellation and forgiveness, advocated for that, but needed that student loan forgiveness out of the way, taxability of student loan forgiveness out of the way, to make that potential policy a reality. To Senator Warren's credit and her staff's credit, they were successful in pushing President Biden forward to try to cancel student loan debt. Now, they were not able to get it done at the legislative level. And you know why? It's because a lot of moderate members of Congress, Democratic members of Congress, were not in support of that policy. And so they pushed really hard for the executive branch to try to do it where it was less of a surefire thing. Of course, it got shot down by a conservative majority Supreme Court. And thinking about all of that transpired, you know, if you kind of think about the issue of student loan forgiveness, it is very popular among people who have high levels of education, not very popular among more rural working class voters that, you know, the Democrats were trying to win over to win races in sort of purple states, right? Or even red districts, right? So, you know, you did see, I think Representative Glusenkamp Prez, I think is her name, she was one of the people who voted against providing student loan forgiveness and cancellation, basically broad-based. And that's not really where it died. It really died in the Senate, where moderate senators, some of the moderate senators in the Democratic caucus, did not want to advance that legislatively through cancellation. So anyways, that's a detailed dive on that. But what they did to make student loan forgiveness tax-free, because it passed through budget reconciliation, they did it via a temporary maneuver where they basically said, all right, we're going to make this a temporary rule change because of budget reconciliation. So we're only going to have it last from 2021 to 2025, and that's it. And I think what they were expecting is if they only did it for 4 years, they were going to be able to extend that in 2025, and that wouldn't be a problem because they would have at least one of the chambers of Congress or the White House or both, and they'd be able to negotiate and, you know, extend that deadline. Of course, the best laid plans of mice and men don't always go according to plan, right? So what happened? You had President Trump win the 2024 election. Republicans won both houses of Congress. And Republicans were really upset about the student loan cancellation efforts from the Biden administration. I think maybe the most conservative members of the Republican caucus view student loan forgiveness as a cynical ploy to reward political supporters, right? I'm, again, saying this is what I think probably the more very conservative voices in the Republican Party would say. They were really upset about it. I mean, I did talk to people close to certain members of Congress that would be considered pretty conservative, and essentially they let me know, hey, our members are really unhappy with anything related to student loan forgiveness. Like, they feel very opposed to this. They feel like this was an area where President Biden really tried to overreach and overstep his constitutional authority, and this is something that anything related to student loan forgiveness, our conservative members are not for, right? And so what we saw happen is the taxability of student loan forgiveness became a way to put the check back in place against mass cancellation, because in the same way that they needed that tax-free student loan forgiveness to be able to do cancellation in the first place, putting that back in place stops mass cancellation from student loans, because you would have to change the law and you would have to make that student loan forgiveness tax-free to even be able to do student loan cancellation in the first place. That is why the Republican members of Congress, in my view, allowed the taxability of student loan forgiveness to come back, because the goal is to stop student loan cancellation. Now, what I think about the changes that they made is you're already seeing some amount of compromise happen. And what do I mean by that? In 2025, there was a lot of people that were eligible for student loan forgiveness. It became very clear that the Department of Ed, because they were trying to eliminate it, was not going to have enough staff to adjudicate and make decisions on all the forgiveness cases that were pending before it before the end of the year. And why did that matter? Well, because the student loan forgiveness taxes came back as of January 2026. And so you're essentially going to have a mass chaos event where people who were supposed to be forgiven were not going to get decisions before the taxation of student loan forgiveness came back. And that would be devastating to people. I mean, in a lot of cases, we're talking tens of thousands of dollars in taxes that people would have to pay that they don't have in many cases. And so what Department of Ed said to kind of quell the anger and the upsetness among borrowers is they said, okay, well, we're going to make a compromise. We're going to say anybody who gets forgiveness in 2026, if your date that you were supposed to be forgiven was actually 2025 and we just got around to processing it in 2026, then we're going to make it tax-free. We're going to say that technically the forgiveness happened in 2025, even though it happened actually in 2026 because we just got around to it, and we're not going to issue any 1099s. It's not going to be taxable. Here is the big problem with that. Presumably, all of the backlog from 2025 tax year will be finished by the end of 2026. What does that mean? You know, actually, it's kind of interesting to think about because some people are going to be getting forgiveness still in 2026 for the next several months that were actually qualified to be forgiven in 2025, most likely. Now, the hard thing to do is when you make that compromise, how do you identify somebody who was forgiven in 2026 that was supposed to actually be forgiven in 2026? And then how do you identify somebody that was forgiven in 2026 that actually qualified in 2025? Well, that's a big freaking difference. Because if you have to issue a 1099, that's a really important tax requirement for the servicers to get right. So essentially, Department of Ed is now saying, well, because we don't want to take the political heat from this law change that we did to stop student loan cancellation primarily, we're going to waive all these penalties that we put back in place, but for this class of borrowers, and oh, by the way, servicer, you're going to have to figure out, do you issue a 1099 for people getting forgiveness that qualified in 2026 and got it in 2026? But oh, by the way, don't issue a 1099 for people who get forgiveness in 2026 that qualified for it in 2025. So one thing that I've seen in 10 years of doing this is both parties absolutely love to make the servicers have to deal with all the problems that they don't feel like dealing with. Don't get me wrong. I've got a bunch of plumbing problems in my house. Every time something goes wrong, I call my plumber and I'm like, thank you so much for dealing with this. I have no interest in dealing with this. Please do it. And please take my money and do the things that you need to do. Okay. I am not a, I do the same thing that Congress does. Okay. When it comes to student loan servicers, basically, Congress looks at the clogged toilet full of excrement that is student loans, and they say, this stinks. This is smelly. Student loan servicers, can you please fix this for me? I don't want to deal with it. Sorry for that graphic image. Let's change the vibe a little bit here, okay? So let me give you some positive thoughts about this. So what I think we're going to see, first of all, these are positive thoughts for anybody who's going to be forgiven in 2020s or 2030s. By 2027, I'm pretty confident that by 2027, we will start seeing people that have received 1099s with huge student loan forgiveness taxes, 1099Cs, and it's going to list 200,000, 300,000, 400,000 forgiven, right? Now, if you have a tax preparer or CPA, you can fill out a form if you're broke and you have liabilities that are greater than your assets called the insolvency exclusion, okay? So this is a literal form. It's Form 982, Reduction of Tax Attributes Due to Discharge of Indebtedness. What this says is it says if you have a debt that's larger, if all your debts are larger than your assets, then forgiveness happens tax-free, so you're not taxed. So it's only taxed to the extent you have assets that are much greater than your loans, okay? If someone has that, if the assets are much larger than the loans and you do have to pay taxes on it, you know, I think that people are not going to want to, even if they can't, right? Even if they were going to have to liquidate some of their brokerage account to meet this tax bill, people are not going to want to do that. That's going to be very painful, right? Because most people, it's not in their brokerage, it's in their house, it's in their retirement, it's in their practice equity, right? And that's real painful to take money out of those assets that are not liquid. And so people are going to really be up in arms on this. And I predict a lot of people are going to call their congressperson, a lot of people, they're going to call their senators. And a lot of people are going to be really incensed about this, okay? And then remember that the purpose of the whole change in the tax code was just to block student loan cancellation, okay? Just to try to kill student loan forgiveness as hard as they possibly can, right? Now, what I think that will happen is you'll probably see You know, especially if the Democrats win either the House or the Senate in the midterms, there will probably be some major problems with student loans that are going to rear their ugly heads by 2027, 2028 or so. A couple of the problems I'm anticipating are Parent Plus folks that don't consolidate by the July 1 deadline. A ton of people are going to go into default because of that rule, because it's super strict, right? If you aren't consolidated by July 2026, July 1, if you aren't consolidated by that date, your Parent Plus loans have no affordable repayment plan options like income-based repayment or PSLF whatsoever. No options, zero. If your loan consolidation closes after July 1, doesn't matter. If you take out one Parent Plus loan, a tiny Parent Plus loan after July 2026, too bad, so sad, the whole thing's poisoned, you cannot access anything. So that's going to mess up a lot of borrowers. Tens of thousands of people are going to default because of that rule, and Congress is going to be under pressure to fix that. Similarly, I think in 2027, you're going to see tens of thousands of borrowers get all these tax notices. If people don't pay the tax, the IRS is programmed to look for income that people haven't paid tax on. They will find you, and they will send you all these giant, scary bills for penalties plus interest. You know, I think that IRS is really good at finding these things, right? They know about it because it's been reported to them, and they will contact you about it if you haven't paid the tax on it or reported the income as income. And so what I think will happen is you'll have all these like student loan fixes, and even if Democrats sweep House and Senate, you're going to have more leverage with the Trump administration to negotiate compromises around this issue. So I would expect, here's my bold prediction, in 2027 or 2028, I think we will see a change to the tax code to make student loan forgiveness permanently tax-free. But you obviously, a lot of crazy things have happened year to date so far. We're not even halfway through the year. It's a bold prediction. It's not something I'm positive is going to happen. It's just something that I think is going to happen at some point in 2027. If you are concerned at all by the changes going on with student loans, we'd love to help you make sense of them. studentloanplanner.com/book if you want to get a plan. And if you have questions, studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. We're going to be going into depth about some of the big changes happening this fall for new students and currently enrolled students, because I think even if you're already graduated, I think it'll be kind of fun and interesting to know what the future of your profession will look like in the next several years. And so we're going to maybe do a couple episodes on that as we go closer to the busy season for people trying to finance their degrees. And we'll also go into detail when the new regs have finally dropped as to what's in them and what it means for you. Thank you so much for listening to the Student Loan Planner podcast. Have a great rest of your day. Are you on the free Student Loan Planner email list? If yes, you could upgrade your experience and discover student loan loopholes so good, they might get repealed if I talk about them publicly. Find out my very best thought leadership that I really just can't be super open about anymore, unfortunately. If you want to get our very best tips, not just the ones that I can share for free, go to studentloanplanner.com/insider to get a special discount for your year membership. That's studentloanplanner.com/insider and get our very best dozens of bonus content and tips that's going to save you money and get you out of student debt faster. And if you're already an SLP insider, please reply back to those emails and let me know how I can make it even more valuable.